Skydio stands at the forefront of autonomous drone technology in the United States, innovating with advanced AI to deliver drones tailored for law enforcement and governmental applications. Established in 2014, our expertise spans AI, robotics, and electrical vehicle technologies, enabling us to craft the most intelligent flying machines that enhance public safety and operational efficiency. Hey, welcome back to Policing Matters on PoliceOne.com. I'm your host, Jim Dudley. Well, we know that police work is not for everyone. If it was easy, anyone would do it. Well, for some, the lack of I taught classes yesterday, too, and I had a break in the middle of a class.
Oh, no. I just got over that stuff a couple weeks ago, so.
Yeah, I tested. It felt so bad. I tested. I'm fine.
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Hey, welcome back to Policing Matters on PoliceOne.com. I'm your host, Jim Dudley. Well, we know that police work is not for everyone. If it were easy, anyone could do it. For some, the stress, sacrifices, and lack of positive reinforcement exposure to firsthand or vicarious trauma may be too much. I'm a proponent of law enforcement, as most of you know, to the point of being called a law enforcement evangelist. I try not to discourage anyone from the profession, but some need help. How can we give enough support to help those to continue? When do we need to call it quits? Well, Sheriff Scott Rose is the host producer of the Officer Down Memorial podcast, which is dedicated to ensuring the service and sacrifice of our fallen officers and to make sure that they're never forgotten. Within many of these podcasts, he also discusses PTSD and cumulative stress in law enforcement. Scott Rose was elected the 26th sheriff of Dodge County in 2014. The Dodge County Sheriff's Office serves a county of population of nearly 21,000, including six municipalities. Well, welcome to Policing Matters, Sheriff Scott Rose.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sorry. I've got a little scratch in my throat today.
Oh, no worries.
Hey, you've been hosting your podcast for a while. What put you onto the topic?
So I started the podcast in 2020, and I sit on the board with the Minnesota Law Enforcement Memorial Association, also the Law Enforcement Memorial Foundation of Southeast Minnesota, and the Invisible Wounds Project in Minnesota. So in addition to my work in law enforcement, I've spent a ton of time with survivor families. And of course, with LEMA, we're busy with LEMA, not only providing services and support for survivor families, but we put on all the law enforcement funerals in the state. And we also train other honor guards from all over the country on how to honor the support and sacrifice of these officers with these celebrations of service or funerals. And so I've been passionate about survivor families, passionate about law enforcement. My dad was in law enforcement. My eldest son is in law enforcement. My grandfather was in law enforcement. So it's my family. And in 2020, with everything going on with COVID and with the Floyd incident in Minnesota here, I was looking for something where with these survivor families, having worked with them, if you look at these websites, you look at the state memorial sites, you see a paragraph. It's just a brief paragraph that explains, you know, the officer's incident and what happened to the officer and how we lost them. But it really doesn't tell you much about the officer. And having worked with survivor families, I know there's so much more to their stories. And the podcast idea was a way for me to try and share those stories and help these survivor families make sure that their fallen officer is never forgotten. With these spouses, their biggest fear is their husband or their wife or their son or daughter. They're going to be forgotten. You know, their story and their sacrifice is going to be forgotten. And the sacrifice that these survivor families make goes on forever. That doesn't ever stop. We need to make sure we support them. And for me, with everything going on post Floyd and COVID, the anti-law enforcement rhetoric was really high nationwide at that point. And a podcast like this, honoring our fallen and helping these survivor families ensure that their loved ones' service and sacrifice is never forgotten. It also sends a message to the men and women who are serving and the men and women who are considering serving. It sends the message that what we do is important. What we do is noble. What we do is something unique. You know, we're asking ordinary people to take extraordinary risks for people they don't even know, because we're looking for people who believe in service before self. And I thought that was a perfect time to do something like this and to promote law enforcement and help these survivor families. So that's why I got it started.
Yeah, well, I tip my hat to you for doing that, because I think we get so many negative messages. A message like yours, a friend of mine, Chaplain Jared Altick from Kansas City. There's so many others, Blue Help out there that help survivors and people with trauma, and sometimes to the point of reaching crisis. We've had the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund CEO and others come on the show to talk about who we lost. We have Below 100, the program dedicated to lowering the number of law enforcement officers' deaths by being smart, by wearing seatbelts, driving more carefully, and other things. What else are you preaching? What else can we do to keep those numbers down?
Well, the reality is it starts at the top. You know, since Floyd, actually since Ferguson, frankly, our politicians in our country have used law enforcement as kind of a political football. You know, they've used it for votes and for support, and they've promoted this on a narrative of systemic issues with racism and use of force within law enforcement, that there's no real data to support that. If you look at the numbers nationwide, there's no numbers that support a systemic issue like that within law enforcement. The problem there is, again, you have politicians who are making statements convicting cops in cases of use of force long before the investigation's ever been completed. We have to have state and local leaders who openly support and edify law enforcement, even when it's not politically correct to do so. You know, if you're a governor in a state that has leadership that's promoting or that promoted refunding or defunding or reimagining police, you know, all the buzzwords that they used back then, if you're a governor who didn't support it but didn't speak out against it, you were supporting it. You know, your silence is deafening to the law enforcement community, because our men and women need to know that they have the support, that they have the support at the state level, not the local level, regional level, and the state level. And law enforcement is stressful enough the way it is. Our careers are, this calling is so stressful from a, you can't unsee what we see. And, you know, it's cumulative stress that builds year after year, year after year. Every cop that's out there has some degree of PTSD. I firmly believe that. It's just we all process it differently. And the job is stressful enough the way it is without our men and women having to worry about the state or having to worry about the feds, having to worry about being the next news bite on CNN or Fox News, or, you know, they need to be able to focus on their training and focus on what they're doing. And we need leadership that shows that support and shows that we believe and support law enforcement, and that starts at the top.
Yeah, I mean, you make really good points. I mean, even at their own agency, the leadership shown, you're right on with talking about 2020, not only COVID and not only George Floyd, but the political winds that pushed the defunding movement, and some chiefs and sheriffs seem to acquiesce. I think the officers under their leadership looked around to say, well, where are we in this? What should we do?
Right.
And there was some confusion. That's never good in police work.
No.
So, you know, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I refer to them as experiments. You know, we had experiments like the defunding of the police, or reforming of the police, or reimagining of the police. And you know, frankly, these were experiments to garner political support. And when it was politically correct to do so. And then our last election cycle, for example, in our state, many of our politicians who were anti-police, pro-reform, all now are on the bandwagon of, we got to push all this money towards police and we support our law enforcement. And they're important because their idea, they're reimagining, they're reforming, they're defunding, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's so frustrating when you get politicians who take a broad brush and paint all of us as bad, as systemically racist or system or brutal, with use of force issues because of one mistake, or because of, you know, you look at the vast majority of law enforcement. We've got, when we're fully staffed in Minnesota, we've got over 10,000 cops here. And 99.9% of them are amazing, amazing people. And all they want to do is help. That's the only reason they got into this career. They, you know, they felt that calling to serve. They're not in it for the money. In our state, for example, during the last campaign season, you know, they were talking about, they pushed all these bonuses for cops to sign on, and all these additional wages and all these other benefits. And frankly, none of, you know, this, we don't, none of us got into this for the money, you know, and to think that is ridiculous. That, and to think that is basically assuming that this is just a job for us. And it's not. This is more than a job for us. The people, the men and women who serve, the risks they take, they're putting service before self. Their dedication to our communities is like no other career field. It's not a job. It's a calling.
Right.
And we just got to stop making. We just got to stop using law enforcement as a political football. In Minnesota, we're nonpartisan for sheriffs. We have 87 sheriffs in Minnesota. We don't run on a Democrat or a Republican platform, which I think is the way it should be, because the law enforcement has no place in politics. Unfortunately, that's not what we've seen since Ferguson and Floyd. And the end result is we have all these officers working in these communities across the United States and across our state in Minnesota, who've worked years to build trust within those communities. And that trust can be broken by a simple statement by the governor, by a simple statement by the attorney general, by statements from our national leaders. During the not the last election cycle, but before, Bernie Sanders, for example, when he was running, and he made a statement at the at Benedict College, he said, I would respect that they are doing, I'm gonna read this word for word, because it just I couldn't believe he said it. I would respect what they, referring to cops, I would respect what they are doing so that you don't get shot in the back of the head, when he's referring to traffic stops, and when he's referring to people of color being concerned about or being afraid of traffic stops. So I would respect what they are doing, referring to the person being stopped. Respect that cop so you don't get shot in the back of the head. That's what he's saying. When you have leadership at the federal level who says that, who makes comments like that, you know, it's no wonder the respect in law enforcement has diminished so much over the last several years. It's just, it's such a frustrating time for me to be in law enforcement in such a field that is, has been always so honorable and noble, and you know, my whole family's been involved in it, and they're just amazing, amazing people. And the staff that I have at the Dodge County Sheriff's Office, you know, we couldn't have a better staff of men and women. They care about our community, and for them to be told or to be put in this broad group of now we're, because of this one act, or because of another act, because of Ferguson or because of Minneapolis or whatever, now we're racist and we need to be fixed. We need police reform. We need to fix this. Well, we're not all broken. You know, you can't, it's just, it's been so frustrating. And I've seen so many people retiring and leaving and lose their motivation in being proactive because they're afraid of being a target.
Right.
There's so many layers of the onion. It's a tough time for law enforcement right now.
Yeah. And I've talked to researchers recently who were doing a study on several departments asking officers about de-policing, about a lack of proactive policing, maybe in response to what we've seen over the last few years. I mean, most cops I know have that defiance in them, and they're up for the challenge, and they will put their head down and work hard in spite of the criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, I mean, it's just another push to get them to step away or go introspective. We've done so much to smash the stigma surrounding mental health issues, suicide, the prevention of suicides. What else can we be doing there?
So there are so many levels to it. And cumulative stress, we're finally now starting to realize in law enforcement that cumulative stress is a real thing. PTSD is a real thing. In the past, it was always thought of to be a military thing, not a law enforcement thing. But cumulative stress, I mean, I explain it this way when I'm speaking, is that when we're on the job, every day there are things that we can't unsee that we deal with, because we deal with people at their worst moments of their lives. And that whittles away at you. I mean, that just, it chips away at you. And I explain it this way. If our lives are like a pond, our career is like a pond of water. So you take that pond of water, and every call that we go to is a different size rock or different size stone. You know, you go to a traffic crash where someone's injured. That's a pretty good size stone. You throw that stone in the water, it makes a ripple effect. That ripple lasts a while, but then the water starts to calm down and it kind of gets back to normal. And then you go to the next call. Well, the next call, let's say it's a suicide. Let's say it's a juvenile suicide, which are some of the toughest for us as cops to deal with. That's a big stone. You know, so you take that stone, you throw it in the water. That's a huge ripple effect. Lasts a lot longer. Takes you a lot longer to get over that. Water calms down. And you keep adding these stones into your pond. And over the years, while the water at the top, that level at the top levels off, the ripples go away, that pile of stone in that pond keeps building up. That doesn't go away. And at some point, you got to address that. Mm. When I started back in law enforcement, you were told not to talk about, you didn't talk about stuff. If there was a call that bothered you, you kept it to yourself. It's part of the job. Can't handle it, go, you know, get a different job. Just go to the next call. That's how we were taught. You just, not something that you talked about. We know now, when you look at suicide numbers, when you look at PTSD numbers, when you take a real look at cumulative stress within law enforcement, that's not sustainable. You can't do that. Now, some people handle stress differently. Some people handle and are able to process that cumulative stress differently. Myself, for example, I really didn't do a lot of debriefings and counseling up until we lost one in the line of duty in 2013, who was one of my best friends at work. Then I needed the help because I didn't know how to process it. You know, fortunately, we had some help available. And I was able to work through that. The one thing that it was never explained to me, and that we have to remember to explain to our new cops, is with these debriefings. For example, with our mental health programs that we have within our agency, if you're at a critical incident, before the end of your shift, we're going to have what we call a defusing, where we're going to get everybody together who was at that call, and only people who were there at the call. And we're going to discuss it. We're going to leave it wide open. You can talk and share your concerns on how it went, how it didn't go well, what we could have done differently, whatever. That's our diffusing. Then within two sleep cycles, we're going to do a debriefing with a counselor, but only people who were there at the scene to talk about it and to talk about issues and things that are frustrating them or things that are stressing them. And one thing that was never explained to me, even though I didn't go to a lot of those because I felt like I was processing things okay, it was never explained to me that I should go there to support those who are struggling with it, to be a support person for them. And since I had a leadership who explained it to me that way, I go to everyone that I can that I'm involved with. Hmm. But we do the diffusings, the debriefings. We changed our system here. Most in Minnesota, anyway, the cities and the counties have a state-funded counseling pool of counselors that we're allowed to have our staff go to in the event that they need to talk to somebody about issues. Mm-hmm. And the big problem with law enforcement is the majority of these counselors have no idea what we do. They don't know anything about law enforcement. You know, so in our agency, we have retained a counseling firm up in the Twin Cities who just specialize in law enforcement. So our guys are men and women who serve along with their spouses have those services available to them in the event that they feel like they need to talk to somebody. We make that available to them because we want this to be a culture. Law enforcement needs to be a culture where it's okay not to be okay. And it was never like that before. Hmm. If you're going to a lot of these calls over and over again and you're saying, yeah, it's not, this doesn't bother me. Well, you're lying, to be honest, because to one degree or another, it's bothering you. And whether it bothers you now or whether it bothers you later, it's your pond is filling up with rock or with stone. And at some point, you're going to have to address that. So we've got the peer support programs here. We have the annual mandatory checkups where you have to talk to a counselor for a couple hours a year here. We've got counseling services available for you and your spouse at no cost to you. We have a chaplain program where we have embedded chaplains within patrol. We have a peer support program. The peer support program is great in seeing some of the warning signs before the issues get big. Mm-hmm. We just have to have agencies who encourage and develop a culture where it's okay not to be okay. And that support is there for these men and women, especially these younger men and women that are coming in. Otherwise, yeah, it's going to burn them out.
Yeah, for sure. I want to talk about resilience. I don't think we talk about resilience enough. And I want to talk about that. But first, I'd like to take a quick moment and thank our sponsor. As we explore the future of law enforcement technology, let's focus on Skydio, a leader in U.S. autonomous drone innovation. Headquartered in San Mateo, California, and manufactured in Hayward, California, Skydio uses cutting-edge AI and robotics to develop drones that significantly boost the operational efficiency and safety of law enforcement agencies. Trusted by industry authorities and supported by prominent investors such as Andreessen Horowitz and NVIDIA, Skydio sets the benchmark for quality and security in drone technology. Discover how Skydio's advanced aerial surveillance capabilities are revolutionizing policing across the nation at skydio.com. That's Skydio, SKYDIO.com. And we're back, and I'm speaking with Sheriff Scott Rose, the host and producer of the Officer Down Memorial podcast, and he is the sheriff in Minnesota. Resilience. So, you know, I have a lot of friends, police officers, former police officers, some do podcasts, some love social media, but it feels to me like it's almost the daily message of morose. It doesn't feel uplifting. It it feels weighty. And I wonder if people struggling, if that helps them or if it just cements and reinforces their you know, being in this mire. What are the messages we should be giving out there? And does that hurt? Or do you think it hurts to say, hey, I know we're all feeling terrible today. Let's do something positive because we're all in this awful situation.
I don't know. I wish there was a simple answer to it. You know, the reality is we need to get back to where we as a society support law enforcement. For me, it got to the point where I had to shut down. I had to turn off national media, national news. I had to stop following a lot of politics. And I had to just focus on what we were doing here in Dodge County, focus on our staff, and really try and push that narrative from our administration down to show our staff that they're supported and they're loved and they're, and we appreciate everything they do and their spouses. You know, it's got to start at, we got to pull politics away from it. Is the big thing. And it's easier for sheriffs to do than police chiefs to do, frankly. You know, as a sheriff, I don't answer to a county board or city board or a mayor or anything. I answer to who elected me. And I will do my job based on what I feel the majority of the people that voted for me or the electorate, the people that voted for me, I'm going to follow the narrative that I think they believe in. But I also have to be true to myself and follow the same narrative that I have to follow the narrative that I think is right for law enforcement and right for our community. And if those two collide and if those two don't meet up, that's when in 4 years they can vote for somebody else, frankly. With chiefs, it's different because the chiefs they're appointed by a city council and a city mayor. And depending on the communities that they're in, there's a political narrative that they're expected to follow. And, you know, unfortunately, the chiefs are put in a position where if they don't speak up against that narrative, if that narrative doesn't support law enforcement and they don't speak up against it, their entire staff looks at it as, okay, the chief doesn't support us. The city doesn't support us. Why are we even doing this? Why do I want to be here? Why shouldn't I go to a different agency or a different county or a different state for that matter? You know, so it goes both ways. We need leadership at the top to show support of law enforcement, but we also need leadership at the local level to stand up and speak out. You know, in addition to that, we also need to have, We need to have people put into positions, whether it's a county attorney's office or judges that are appointed. We need to stop. The narrative has always been, we need to fix the police. I shouldn't say always, but it's been that way since Ferguson and since Floyd. Mm-hmm. And that narrative has to go back to, we need to work together on crime and violent crime. And what can we do to work on that together? Yeah, are there some law enforcement issues? Yeah. Are there some bad apples in law enforcement? Yeah, there are. You've got that you have bad doctors, you have bad attorneys, you have bad clergy. You know, not to pick on any one particular area, but if you look at the amount of clergy who have been in trouble versus the percentage-wise, the amount of law enforcement who have been in trouble, there's a lot more clergy. You know what I mean? If you look at the numbers, if you look at the totality of numbers nationwide and the amount of cops we have nationwide and the millions of interactions that they have with people nationwide, and so few interactions ever result in a felonious action, an action that would create an uproar like Floyd or Ferguson or whatever. We need to focus on the good things. We need to focus on what cops do for our communities, the importance of them in our communities. We need to share those good stories. Not the bad stories, you know, they need to be shared too, but they can't be the narrative. They can't, you can't keep that as the narrative because, I think the vast majority of people we saw it here in Minnesota this week with our Burnsville, funerals. The vast majority of people here in Minnesota support law enforcement. Unfortunately, often is the case where those that are anti-law enforcement or for reform or refunding or reimagining, they're the small minority, but they're the loudest. And I listened to some radio stations here this week from the Twin Cities area who even said, you know, we are guilty of at times in Minnesota anyway, because of all the dynamics we've had here with law enforcement, that media in Minnesota tends to be guilty on showing support for law enforcement because they don't want to deal with that small minority, the backlash, because that backlash is loud. And usually on social media, that's where it is. This, they're keyboard warriors. We have to support cops. We got to get back to supporting cops, and we got to get back to recognizing it as the amazing calling and career that it is.
Yeah, and when you talk about leadership, I mean, I've always been a big fan of leadership by walking around, by, you know, sitting down with cops working for you, jumping in a radio car with them. The leadership has to give the confidence to the troops by getting out in front of those issues that you see sometimes in the media,
right?
Of meeting back with daily briefings and saying, hey, look, this is in the media right now. We can't give a response because it's an ongoing investigation that we don't want to jeopardize that. But I want you all to know that the officer involved is not under investigation or whatever the message is. Communication is as important as the deed, but you've got to support it with the deeds as well.
Right. And unfortunately, in most cases, what's unsaid tends to be louder than what's said. For example, in Minnesota here, we have a governor who has been under fire lately by the right for supporting defunding, refunding, reforming police, whatever the case may be. The reality is he never really openly supported it, but he never denounced it. You know, he never spoke up against it. That falls back on politics. That silence was deafening to our cops, because they want to hear somebody who, like you said, they want to hear somebody that sticks up for them, that says, hey, yeah, the cops make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. We're human. But the vast majority of us, we're not broken. Law enforcement isn't broken. Law enforcement, is still good and important in these communities. And all the time that we've spent building trust in these communities, you can erode that in a soundbite or two, by either what's said or what's unsaid. Go ahead. I'm sorry. It's just frustrating.
I'm with you. And, you know, we try to use tools like early warning systems or early detection systems, so a sergeant could sit down with their squad individually, go over their performance, not necessarily to criticize, but also to understand all the perspectives and nuances, and then try to figure out how they're doing otherwise, right? And you mentioned peer support programs. I was in our peer support program.
Yep.
Where you do check-ins, and if you see something wrong, then you try to talk it out and then maybe go a step further with an employee assistance program or something like that. Going back to suicide, I know it's tough to talk about, but sometimes we just never know. We never see it. We don't see it coming. How can we do a better job of catching signs earlier if we check in with an officer who's saying, you know, thumbs up, all's good, everything's great, nothing to talk about, nothing to see here, you know, keep moving.
All right. So if you go to the podcast, there is the Corey Slifko story is on the podcast. He was a South St. Paul sergeant who committed suicide in 2019. And Corey was one of those cops that he was a cop's cop. I mean, he was Tackleberry. You know, he had all the gear, all the gadgets. First one through the door, first one to volunteer for stuff. He was on SWAT. He was on entry. You know, he did everything. He lived and breathed 24/7. He was a cop. And that was part of his falling, because that cumulative stress, that he put on himself, the PTSD from calls, he had chronic pain from injuries, and because he always pushed everything 150%. He was one of those sergeants, one of those leaders who was always there, would say he was always, you can call me 24/7. He would say 7 days a week, 24/7, you call me or text me, I'll be there for you. I want to make sure you're okay. But he's the last person who would ask for help.
Hmm.
And he ended up shooting himself in 2019. And that, if you listen to that story, what's brutal about that podcast is listening to his young teenage son, make the 911 call and tell the dispatcher that my dad shot himself. And you can hear Ethan calming. He's telling his mom and telling his daughter to calm down. He's, at the time, he was, I think, 12. No, I take that back. He was 14, and I think his Maya was 12. Anyway, the two kids there, mom there, he's telling everybody to calm down. He's telling dispatch, my dad shot himself. He's upstairs in the bedroom, and I'm pretty sure it's because of his PTSD. You know, he's just a young teen, and he's telling dispatch that my dad killed himself because of PTSD. You know, they tried to help Corey. But I don't know if his pond was too full, you know, to where he just waited too long to get that help. But like you said, we just need to make sure we've got different layers of support. So we can help these officers. They need to know that if there's a case that's bothering them, if they're dealing with PTSD or dealing with cumulative stress from different calls, or they need to know that that's not going to mean we're going to take their badge and shield and take them off the roster. Mm-hmm. They need to know that we're there to support them, that we're there to help, and that we've got the resources to help them, not push them away and say, okay, you need to go fix this. And when you're fixed, you come back, because that's the way it used to be. But there's several levels. Like for us, for example, we have the chaplains. We started with chaplains in our organization because we knew we were in a culture where our cops didn't talk to other. We didn't talk about stuff like that, because that's just not what we did in the past. That's not what we were taught. So having chaplains start with our organization, those chaplains built those relationships and got our deputies comfortable in talking about stuff that was stressing them. Then after that, we added the peer support program, which was the next layer, where you have staff that are trained with peer support who can provide that support, who can talk to these officers and be protected by HIPAA because of their training. So the officers know, I can talk to this peer support person and know that it's not automatically going to go right back to administration. And I can try and work out my problems that way. Then the third layer is the support with, EAP was a failure for us because our county's EAP, those folks, God bless them, they tried, but they don't know anything about law enforcement. Mm-hmm. You know, so our counselors are specific to law enforcement. We have that level. We have the support for the officer and the spouses. So the spouses know that, hey, if you think something's going on with your husband or wife who serves on our department, and you feel like you need to talk about it, we've got somebody for you to talk to, because that's another layer, where spouses are going to see the issue before we do in many cases, not always, but in many cases. Mm. And then it goes to that annual checkup where, you know, we have counselors that they're comfortable with, that they work with every year, that they talk with every year, that they build a relationship with and build a rapport with. And they know they're talking to a counselor who knows what they're going through, that has walked their walk. So they feel comfortable in talking with that person and knowing that they're in a setting where they can safely be open about it, because they know at our agency, it's okay not to be okay.
Mm.
you know, for us, there were several layers to get to the point where I think we're at now. And it's expensive. It's expensive. It takes a lot of effort. And a lot of agencies don't have the manpower for it, don't have the funds for it. Don't have either city council or county administrator or county board members who don't understand it. You know, they don't know law enforcement. They don't know what we go through. They don't understand. Most of them don't understand cumulative stress or PTSD, and yet they're holding the purse strings on our annual budgets. It's really tough to for me in my career. I'm in my third term as sheriff. That was probably the biggest hurdle for me, from a board standpoint is trying to get them to understand the mental health issues that our staff goes through, because it's something that they've never dealt with. You know, it's something that you don't know the stressors that you, whether it's juvenile suicide or you know, some of the tragedies we see and that we deal with, you can't unsee it. And unless you've been put in that position, it's hard to understand it. And it's hard to understand the after effects of that pond, the stones in the pond. So it's all about education. It's about talking. It's about being open with your staff and being open with your leadership that assigns your budget. But then there's only so much they can do as well. You know, so you have to have, there's an educational piece there that we just have to keep working on. We're finally getting started. I testified at the state level and at the federal level with Corey Slifko's wife for state and federal benefits for survivor families of blue suicide. And both bills have been passed now. And we're super excited about that for these families, because these survivor families of blue suicide, they're kind of the forgotten families. You know, you have Police Week each year, you have May 15th each year where we honor our fallen in every state in the United States, and then in Washington, D.C. during Police Week there. But the survivor families of blue suicide, they're, nobody talks about them. And as leadership and as CLEOs or chief law enforcement officers and agencies, we've failed in that department too, because we've done the same thing. Because there's always been such a stigma with mental health and with suicide, it's just easier not to talk about it. But that doesn't fix anything. You know, we have to address it, and we have to move forward. And I think we're trying.
I know that, you get the positive message out there. We love putting the positive message out here. Great having you on the show. I hope people check in on your show, the Officer Down Memorial Podcast. What else have you got, Sheriff Scott Rose? What are you working on these days?
So we've got a lot of interesting stories coming up on the podcast. For those of you who haven't listened to the podcast, it's the easiest way to find it is OfficerDownMemorialPodcast.com. So if you go to that website, each officer that we highlight has their own page with their own bio and family pictures, and it's super interesting and educational. And take a listen to these stories. And help us support these survivor families. We've got, also, if you're a regular podcast listener, you can find it anywhere on Apple, Amazon. It's everywhere you listen to podcasts. We've got downloads in all 50 states and over 60 countries. So we know there's a lot of law enforcement support out there. We've got some great stories coming up from, Minnesota. The next two stories are from Minnesota. The one after that is from Tucson, Arizona. And there's a California story coming up. We've got a lot of good material coming up this year. These survivor families are so thankful when you listen to these stories. When I reach out to these survivor families and tell them, hey, you know, your fallen hero story has been listened to in all 50 states, or in all 50 states and several countries. Just the look on their face is so rewarding, because again, their biggest fear is that their story is going to be forgotten. So I just encourage people, check out the podcast, check out the stories. If you know of a fallen officer, a fallen hero, whose story is one that you think should be told, You can, there's a section on the website where you can, there's a form that you can fill out, because we'd love to talk to you about that. We do a lot of referrals from national cops, and some of the blue suicide stories that we're looking at are coming from organizations like Survivors of Blue Suicide, some great national organizations that support cops as well. It's just been super rewarding, and we just encourage everybody to check it out. So,
yeah, great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for taking time.
Thank you. I appreciate the support, and I appreciate your service too.
Thank you. Hey, to our listeners, hope you enjoyed today's show. Definitely check out the Officer Down Memorial Podcast.com. Check out resources like Blue Help, the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, and we have Police Week coming up soon. So check it out. Check out the resources, and let me know what you think. Drop me a line at policingmatters@policeone.com. policingmatters@policeone.com. Love to hear what you have to say. All right. Hey, take good care. Thanks for checking in. Hope to talk to you again real soon.